Thank you, IPR, Ramayun Saab, Ashraf Saab. Let me just start with a very personal note here, because stand as I do here, talking about Moi's book, reminds me of my communication with a young man back in 2002-2003, and then my meeting with him when I had gone to Harvard for a conference, and I met this young man, self-composed, but also shy and awkward in some ways. Yes, I know that. But when we started talking about things that are also close to my heart, I said to myself, I'm going to watch out for this young man. And I got him to start writing for me. And he wrote for the Friday Times. He wrote for Daily Times. And 15 years, 16 years down the line, he sits there. He now has a portfolio which is more impressive than many who are in their 50s or 60s or 70s. So it's a personal pleasure for me to see him, having gone from a master's student at Boston University to a remarkable scholar. There are many ways in which Moi's book can be looked at, interpreted. But since the time is short, I'll keep it short. I actually want this to be more interactive between Moi and others who are not speaking directly. One thing is purely technical, which is the model that he presents here, which is an extension of and an improvement to the Cold War two-actor model. I think in terms of and purely from an academic, theoretical, conceptual point of view, the book will be debated and critiqued on the basis of that model. During the Cold War, with nuclear weapons on both sides, there was this constant thought among many scholars, not all of them. I mean, Brody was very early on realized that when you have nuclear weapons, you cannot fight nuclear wars. But there were other scholars who thought that perhaps you could in some way fight a nuclear war and win it. Mercifully, by the late 60s, early 70s, better sense, better strategic sense had prevailed, and there was this idea that the center must hold. So despite all the conventional NATO exercises, all the talk about the vulnerable Fulda gap, the fact is that Warsaw Pact and NATO had realized that this balance of terror is going to remain. But what happened was that the periphery got extremely destabilized. Proxy wars and the rest of it, which is where we got the term the stability-instability paradox. But in the case of nuclear dyads, regional nuclear dyads, and in the absence of, as Moid said here, and which is also mentioned in the book, in the absence of those mechanisms, those confidence-building measures, which are always stung by this paradox of they don't work when you need them the most, you have to look at the idea of the use of nuclear weapons and then see the space it creates for stronger parties to come in and ensure that the two belligerents are not going to actually reach the escalation ladder at a point where there might be a nuclear exchange. To this end, and very quickly, Moi, at the very outset, places certain propositions. And one proposition is, as the unipole, the US is directly interested in preventing escalation of regional crises to the nuclear level. I would add that now that possibly the unipole moment is over, or in the process of being over, and we have the rising, other rising powers, including China, this proposition will still hold true in terms of third parties singly or in tandem with other stronger powers coming in and de-escalating. Also, it is not about soliciting. In certain cases, yes, there is going to be soliciting, indirect soliciting, but even if there is no soliciting, the third parties will come unsolicited to ensure that the crisis is de-escalated. One of the most interesting points, and which Moise proves through interviews and cables and other documents, that when the crisis is happening, regardless of the larger strategic interests of the United States involved in the region or with state X or with state Y, its focus will be on crisis de-escalation. Other stuff, whether it is Pakistan's importance or quote-unquote nuisance vis-a-vis Afghanistan, or whether it's the US's strategic partnership with India, the US will do things focused on that de-escalation. Also, that other stronger parties, regardless of their problems or their competition, or their rivalry with the United States, will find common ground with the US to stand by the US and to make sure that the crisis is de-escalated. So it's about power mediation to ensure de-escalation. But coercive strategies, yes, coercion to a point where you can pressurize. But really not crossing that line where you lose that state, you de-incentivize that state to the point where, you become a third party which is seen by that state as completely siding with its adversary. Also, while possession of nuclear weapons should give regional powers greater freedom to show resolve and pursue their crisis objectives, third-party pressure will seriously limit their strategic autonomy. Regional antagonists will compete in attracting third-party support. They could either do this by manipulating the risk of war or by showing restraint as a means of obtaining third-party backing. Brokered bargaining will tend to be a permanent fixture in regional nuclear crises in a unipolar global setting. I would even say not just a unipolar setting, but even a setting where you have, for instance, China appear as another pole. Well, what I find really interesting, although the book is primarily about the nuclear dyad in South Asia, but the model has to go beyond South Asia. It must prove itself if it is effective conceptually and theoretically, then it must be able to prove itself in other regional settings. So there is a chapter in the book which deals with Iran and Israel, also deals with North Korea and the US. Now, I find the North Korea versus the US confrontation or the confrontational model very interesting, because in a standoff of that sort, the US, which is supposed to be the strongest party, which is supposed to be the third party, mediating and trying to de-escalate crises where other regional dyads are concerned, will also be a direct adversary of North Korea. My own sense in this is, and I wrote about this, primarily taking the cue from, and Moise and I had a discussion on this also, and Moise was greatly worried that with the arrival on the scene of President Trump. This, which is, you know, when you have someone like Trump there, any moral can unravel. So I said, regardless of that, this is a situation where China will have the greatest incentive to ensure that it helps the US in leashing North Korea. And that is where the significance of the moral kicks in once again. I must also say that I was talking to some diplomats. There are some very senior diplomats here who've been my mentors. Crisis managers, diplomats who deal with these real life situations, unfolding real time, will always be very cautious about something which is as parsimonious as a theory or a model, because they will be looking at the differences in various cases. The scholars tend to look at the similarities and the commonalities in various cases in order to come up with a theory or a model. So, it will be an interesting discussion. Moise, as a matter of fact, given that he is the only Pakistani who's actually come up with a theoretical model this side of, the nuclear test that we've done, it'll be great if this book is critiqued, if it is talked about, discussed, challenged, because that is how you develop further scholarship, and that is also the hope that Moise has expressed publicly while speaking about the book, and also in the book itself, that, you know, others can take this work further. And on the final note, before Ashraf Saab gives me a heads up, I specifically talked about the model, but this book is also very useful to those who are studying crisis de-escalation, who are studying negotiations, who are studying the conduct of diplomacy in real time, and all of this. So in a way, this is like a roundabout of sorts from where you can go into various directions, at least four directions, if not more, in terms of the work to be done, not just purely, specifically, technically on the nuclear side, but also in terms of various other sub-disciplines within political science and diplomacy. Thank you.